Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we have a two-part interview with one of Great Britain female endurance stars, Verity Ockenden. Verity is fresh from a bronze medal win in the 3,000 metres at the European Indoor Championships in Poland. Verity, who runs for Swansea, sat down and talked all things running and pre-race tunes with Kat. Before that interview, we will discuss the latest race results, including the European Indoor Champs, where we saw amazing performances from the GB team. In the Welsh Elite 10,000 metres, friend of the show Jenny Nesbitt finished in second place behind Lily Partridge in a time of 32.44, with her Cardiff teammate Clara Evans setting a new PB. Mo Farah won the Djibouti Half Marathon, and there were some great performances from British athletes in the US, including Finlay McClear's impressive NCAA Division 1 indoor 800 metre performance and Paddy Deaver's fifth place finish in the NCAA Division 1 cross-country race. We'll also cover the latest running news and look ahead to the Olympic Marathon Trials race in Kew Gardens. As always, I'm joined by Kat, George and Robbie. Robbie, how's your week been since we last spoke?
Pretty good, thank you, Ben. Not bad. Just entered a few races in the hope of getting back to some normality over the next few months. So got a 5K series, reasonably local, and then building up to a half marathon in June. So everything seems pretty optimistic. Can't kind of move for race advertisements at the moment, can you, on social media?
George, speaking of half marathons, any update on your target race or a half marathon on the books?
No, still trying to plan kind of my season now. Bucks track and field was sort of not in the way, but it was beginning of May, and I didn't think I was going to make the Loughborough team anyway, because it's pretty impossible thing to make, but that's now been postponed. So now that's confirmed, I'm going to try and plan my season properly and hopefully find a half marathon end of April, beginning of May.
Kat, how are you? Any running news, any races, anything like that?
No races booked at the moment. I've just been doing the time trials, 5K time trial every 4 weeks, just to see where I'm at. So I'm 9 weeks back to training and did another one on Saturday, which is fairly painful. Went out a bit hard, made it hurt. I'm back within 25 seconds of PB shape, so I'm pretty pleased with how it's going, and hopefully run a PB in 4 weeks time or even in 8 weeks. So yeah, just gonna keep going really.
And was that on a measured industrial estate course, your 5k time trials?
Yeah, that's on the officially measured loop.
Is that clockwise or anti-clockwise, Kat?
Always clockwise.
Clockwise, yeah.
And what wrist do you wear your watch on, Kat?
the one that makes it come up short.
Very good. Robbie, any time in mind for a half marathon crack in June? Or you're not playing any cards close to the chest at the moment?
No, just pit bar PB, really, it's got to be. So to PB at the moment is 1:15:30 odd. So hopefully it'll be a little bit short and it'll be good conditions and that'll enable me to try and get somewhere near kind of 1:15 or there or thereabouts. I feel starting to feel pretty strong again, so as long as I stay injury free and kind of keep the continuous training up, then I'll be pretty confident really. But how are things with you, Ben? Training going well?
Just ticking the weeks off really, just trying to get through each week. A couple of sessions every week, two or three sessions a week. Got 6 weeks or so until hopefully the Wrexham Marathon takes place. Still not completely confirmed, but I think I mentioned last time they've got two courses planned now. One on the English side of the border and one on the Welsh side of the border. So hopefully one of those will take place on that date in April. They're just doing everything they can. Quite a lot of email contact from them. They're just still waiting for confirmation from the government or whoever decides whether these things can go ahead. But training as if it is going ahead.
Mate, you're looking good on Strava anyway. Your sessions are looking really...
If they gave medals out for Strava, I'd be doing okay, I think.
Yeah, well, they should do, really.
Yeah. Plenty to talk about this week, and so we're going to jump straight into it. George, I suppose the main place to start is the European Indoor Champs took place a couple of weeks ago now, and some really good performances from the GB team. Are you going to take us through the men's side of things?
Yeah. So in the men's 800 metres, it was a 400 metre hurdler, Patrick Dobek from Poland, who took a surprise gold medal. You ran a PB of 1:46.81 in the final. And then Matthias Borkowski made it a Poland 1-2. Britain's Jamie Webb ran a brave race. I think he ran the race the way he should have done from the front. He was the fastest in the field. So, you know, you got to take it on. And he didn't quite have it on the day, but earned himself a bronze with 1:46.95. And then GB's other athlete in that men's 800 was Guy Learmonth. He failed to qualify from his semi-final. He finished fourth in the semi-final with two athletes qualified, but good medal for Jamie Webb. In the men's 1500, Jakob Ingebrigtsen took gold in a controversial race. He was disqualified for stepping inside the track and then a couple of hours later was reinstated. Jakob won in 3:37, Martin Lewandowski second in 3:38, and then Jesus Gomez third. British youngster Piers Copeland impressed with a fifth place finish, ran really well, GB senior debut and impressed. But Neil Gawley, been disappointed with a 12th place finish, was probably hoping for a medal, but never really got involved. Jakob pulled him back in the opening few metres, sent him to the back of the field and then sent Gawley to the back of the field. And that was kind of his race run, never got back into it. I don't know what you all think about it, but I think Jakob probably should have been disqualified either for the Neil Gawley thing. I think that got glossed over, to be honest, but I think the DQ they did give him originally for pushing through a gap that wasn't really there and then instigating the contact with the Polish athlete outside him who nudged him back and Jakob had to go inside. And I think that was Jakob's fault, to be honest. There was no need for him to get involved with contact. Like, he was going to win that race. I think everyone knew that. His interview afterwards didn't sit very well with me. I think emotions were running high, but he said something about how I'm not coming back tomorrow for the 3,000 metres if they DQ me. And I think that was a bit childish. Obviously, for viewing figures, the organisers want him in that 3K, and he was probably trying to kind of get back at them for disqualifying him and got reinstated in the end. But I think it was probably a fair DQ. I'm not sure what you thought about it.
I completely agree with you, George. I thought it was a fair DQ. And I thought that over the championships, there was a kind of a wave of kind of anti-DQing, if that makes sense. People, you kind of hear it on, you know, sort of social media and heard it in kind of interviews, and people just don't want to see people DQ. But ultimately, if he's trying to get an advantage from his action and that's led to him coming off the track, I thought that was pretty straightforward, to be honest. I mean, the first time I saw it, I thought it was just bang to rights. And to be honest, he kind of did it as well, didn't he? Because he knew that he was going to obviously get disqualified and then he would get them to review it after that. So he obviously knew that it was going to be kind of touch and go.
Yeah, I felt the same. He made a mistake and everyone knows you can't step on the infield. He tried to take a space that wasn't there. But I think the thing with DQing him in that race is that everybody knows he was going to win it. And so it kind of, he didn't win a medal he wouldn't have won without that situation. But at the same time, it was his mistake and that almost should have cost him the race.
I'll stick up for Jakob, I think, take his side. I think what did jump out at me is the number of athletes in some of the races and the tightness of the track, and particularly in those early stages, so much jostling for position and I suppose nervousness not to lose the race before it even started. So I was personally quite pleased to see him reinstated. One, because I thought he was the class in the field and probably deserved to win. And two, because it's probably nice to give a bit of leniency in my eyes when there's so many people on the track and it's, you know, goes out that fast. But yeah, I suppose the rules is the rules. I was quite glad to see him back in and take the gold.
Just out of interest, on what technicality did they overturn it?
His appeal was that because he got pushed, then it wasn't his fault for stepping inside. But my opinion is because he instigated that contact by pushing through a gap that wasn't there. Are you kind of, he earned the push. But I do then agree with what Ben said. I think the rules are harsh on, because I think it was Jip Vastenberg in the women's 3K that got disqualified from a heat for literally putting her toe on the line. And adding that, particularly in a 3K where you're talking millimetres of advantage, if any, particularly in Jakob's case, he didn't even gain an advantage because he lost his balance. I think the rules need rewriting. As the rules were, I thought Jakob's DQ probably was fair.
wait until people are getting disqualified before local meet events for the wrong shoes, George.
Yeah. Moving on though to that men's 3K, Jakob did return and won. He's to a second gold medal of the championships, looked very good throughout, ran 7:48 in the final to win ahead of Belgium's Isaac Comelli and Spain's Adel Machal. They took silver and bronze. Britain's Andy Butchart finished seventh in 7:52. Jack Rowe ninth in 7:53. Rowe ran very well in the heats to qualify. Andy Butchart looked very good in the heats as well. And then Phil Sessman was the Brit in the team, who again ran really well in the heats, but he had Ingebrigtsen, Comelli and Jimmy Gressier in that heat with only three to qualify. So probably quite unlucky there, but still a strong performance from him too.
Good stuff. Thanks, George. Kat, did you want to run us through the highlights from the women's side of things?
Yeah, so the British women had a really good time in Poland. So in the 800 metres, all three of the British women made the final, with Keely Hodgkinson winning, raced a really good race, a really mature race for a 19-year-old, led for most of it and looked confident and strong for the whole thing. So that was really impressive. Then we had Ellie Baker came in fourth and Isabel Boffey in sixth. So both running really well. I don't know if any of you saw the interview with Ellie Baker that she did on Instagram. It was really good. She talked a lot about her training before this and training with Laura Muir and Gemma Reekie and how that was really bringing her on. So she'll be a really interesting one to watch going forwards. But yeah, so really impressive in the 800. And then in the 1500 metres, we had Katie Snowden and Holly Archer both making the final. And Holly Archer, in another controversial race, got the silver medal. She was DQ'd for a very similar incident to Ingebrigtsen, where she arguably went for a gap on the inside that wasn't there. But it was definitely, she didn't, I don't think she stepped on the infield. There was just, they disqualified her for pushing. But in that race, there was so much of it that it really did seem like an unfair disqualification. She didn't get any advantage. And so luckily they did reinstate the silver and she got that. So that was, really good. And Katie Snowden came in sixth. So really, really good in the 1500 metres too. And then my favourite race of the whole meet was the women's 3,000 metre final. The heats were great too, but the final was really good to watch, obviously having spoken to Verity earlier in January, so really rooting for her. She said, you'll hear in the interview, there was a lot of pushing in that race. It was another quite rough one. I think it does happen on the indoor tracks. But yeah, really great performance from her. Amy Eloise Markov got the gold in that, and obviously Verity was just pipped on the line for the silver and ended up with the bronze. Amelia Quirk, also a really good race. She pushed the pace from the start and made sure that they all got PBs in that race. So that was, yeah, really good one to watch.
Yeah, I would agree, Kat. That 3,000 metre final on the women's side of things was probably my favourite race to watch. Great seeing those British women up at the front for the large majority of the race. Amelia Quirk took a lot of the work on herself. I don't think she wanted it to come down to a burn-up at the end, so she sort of honest the whole way round. Didn't quite get a medal from it, but I think you're right, they could probably thank her for the PBs that that she sort of pulled them round to. Really sort of gutting almost for Verity to not get a silver or even a gold, again based on how it was looking, but to have two British women get a medal and Amelia Quirk to come fifth was a pretty good show, as you said, in the 3,000 meters. Great coverage, I would probably say. I don't know if you guys would agree, BBC coverage, plenty of it, red button and live and highlights.
Yeah, I really liked the predicted pace bit. That was really interesting to see the predicted pace the whole time, because you could really know what sort of pace they were going and know when the race started to slow and speed up. So yeah, I really like that bit on it.
George, if I were to ask you for performance of the competition across the board, whether that be British athlete or otherwise, what would you say?
I think I'd say Keely Hodgkinson. I think not just for winning gold and the way she ran the final, but the way she ran throughout, just she was the fastest in the field, but also probably the youngest. But then to kind of dominate every race in the way that she did was really impressive for someone of that age.
Robbie, what was your standout from the competition?
Yeah, same here for me, Keely Hodgkinson. I think it's just you kind of realise that you were watching something a bit special, really, the way she kind of dominated it. And very similar to kind of the way Laura Muir has dominated races, but you know, she's so young and it's just so exciting. The really exciting part of the whole championships is just kind of how women's middle distance running is looking for the UK at the moment. It's just goes from strength to strength.
I think all eight women in the middle distance races made the final. Like the likes of Laura Muir and Gemma Reekie not going. I think in previous years, Britain might not have sent the 14. British Athletics might not have filled all the spaces when big names don't choose to go. But I think it shows that you should send youngsters. You should send as many people as you can because they certainly stepped up to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, I mean, Laura Muir not being there was almost, you could say, a positive thing for perhaps the other women that GB did send, because now we're talking about Amelia Quirk and Verity Ockenden, and rather than undoubtedly probably talking about Laura Muir a bit. So it was almost a blessing in disguise, I'd say, for the British team not having some of those names there.
I'll tell you what was to watch as well was actual kind of competitive elbows out physical racing as well. I think we've all become so kind of used to watching kind of time trial formats over the last 12 months or so that, you know, the physical nature of it is it's almost like a different sport in a way, a different kind of racing, isn't it, to the kind of time trial format. Obviously, like you said, Ben, the kind of packed kind of numbers on the track probably kind of added to that as well.
If we turn our attention to some UK-based races, or one UK-based race since we last had a chat. So on the 6th of March, there was the Newport Elite 10,000 metres, which took place. And this was an elite-only winter 10K, which took place at Newport Stadium. And it was designed to give athletes an opportunity to race ahead of the marathon trials in Kew Gardens in a couple of weeks' time, or just an opportunity to test fitness now that some racing is able to go ahead. So there was a women's race and a men's race, fairly small fields in both, but some good quality in both women's and men's. If we start with the women's race, so Charlotte Arter led the early stages of the women's race, and she was pretty much there to pace her training partners, Jenny Nesbitt and Clara Evans. Arter, Jenny Nesbitt, Clara Evans and Lily Partridge passed the halfway point, were on target pace for that qualification mark of 32 minutes, 30 seconds. Lily Partridge did then pull clear of the others and finished fairly strongly to win the race just outside of that qualification mark. So Lily Partridge won the race in 32 minutes, 33 seconds. And she said that was a really good confidence boost ahead of the marathon trials in a couple of weeks. Jenny Nesbitt, so a former interviewee on the show, came second. She ran 32:44, and her Cardiff club mate, Clara Evans, came away in third place with a big PB for her in 32:49. In the men's race, which took place a little bit earlier in the day, Emil Caress won that race. So a Leeds athlete in 28 minutes, 14 seconds, which was a PB. Christian Jones from Swansea came second in 28:33, which was also a PB. And then we saw Dewey Griffiths, James Hunt and Michael Ward make up the rest of that lineup, all running quick times, all going under 30 minutes for the 10,000 metres on the track. Good to see this sort of high-level racing take place in the UK, hopefully more of that to come. And as we said, a lot of those athletes may be having a bit of a hit out at a shorter distance ahead of their marathon trials in Kew Gardens.
Did any of you see the coverage of this on Instagram? It was so bad. I mean, I appreciate the person for trying to hold their iPhone up at it, but all I could see was blurred people and had no clue what was happening through any of it. And there were just people constantly writing, "Can you tell me the splits? Who's at the front? Can you hold your phone different? Can you go into lane three?" It was just people trying to get some sort of view of it. But yeah, it was, you know, obviously you always appreciate someone trying, but I had to give up in the end. I couldn't make out anything.
Well, let's hope we get a bit better stream. I don't know if it's been sorted. I don't know if George, if you've seen anything about the marathon trial stream. We mentioned last time how they were asking for sponsors so that they could stream it live. Have you seen anything about that?
Now, I've seen on Twitter someone say that stream details would be released soon. So it looks like there is going to be one, but I'm not sure the full details of that
Okay, you'll have to bunk off work, Robbie, and watch that in the toilets or something.
I thought you were going to say record it with my iPhone. I'm the secret sponsor then.
Robbie, you're going to talk us through some British athletes who have been racing abroad in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so there's been plenty going on, particularly in the States, but just to kind of talk about the Djibouti half, which is on the 5th of March. Bit of a non-event really. I mean, Mo Farah, it was kind of billed as Mo Farah's first race in 2021. So he spent the last 7 weeks at his training camp in Ethiopia. So it's basically just a bit of a tune-up race for him. And he came home for the win in 63 minutes and 7 seconds. A long, long way outside of his kind of usual standard, his usual, obviously his PB. His training partner, Bashir Abdi, the Belgian who joined him for the hour record last year, and he finished just in second place, but reasonably tough conditions. Not that Mo should have been that bothered by it after training in Ethiopia, but it was 28 degrees, but difficult kind of running conditions. It's a bit of a shame, really. In the few days before, somebody I know that we all kind of listened to his podcast, Stephen Scullion, who's been kind of building up to this race, dropped out due to this ongoing throat condition that he's got, which was diagnosed as exercise-induced laryngeal obstruction. Anyone want to correct me on that?
Easy for you to
After
say,
this.
Robbie.
I'm literally just Googling it. Not something I've come across, despite the fact I deal with upper airway obstruction in sleep apnea.
Yeah, from what I saw, I just got a YouTube video or YouTube channel out now as well. It's something to do with like flaps in his throat that close up when he's running hard, which obviously sounds like the harder he runs, the less he can breathe, which is not the way around you want it to be.
So yeah, so but obviously we wish him well in his recovery. So on the 6th of March we had the Sound Running invite, which I know we kind of generated a lot of interest in the British running press and amongst us. Just a really simple format, so six races, 800, 1500 and 5000 for men and women. In terms of the British interest, Lish McColgan came back for the 5,000 meters after running the 10 a couple of weeks before. She went out really confidently, went out really hard, led for 3,400 meters, stepped off after that. So stepped off on about 4,000 just after being swallowed up. And she just looked absolutely exhausted. So, and she said, a good quote from her actually on Instagram. So she said she's disappointed with the DNF, set off looking for a PB, but knew after the first few laps that my legs just weren't there. Oh well, nothing like a shite race to remind you that your body isn't a robot. So I think that's words that we can all relate to from Elish. In terms of the other British interests, Josh Kerr, someone that we probably haven't mentioned much of really on the podcast, but one of Brooks Beast's runners over there in the States, he is just in formidable form at the moment. So he ran 1500 and beat a stacked field in 3:35.78. Which is 3 seconds ahead of Amos Bartels Meyer, who runs for Bowerman. The field included Nick Willis, Sam Prakel, and Matt Centrowitz as well, who's obviously a former gold medalist. They're probably the real interest kind of generated, as always, at the moment. But Mark Scott was made it publicly known that he was aiming for a sub-13 in the 5,000 metres, which has been paced at 13:10 to go under the Olympic qualifying time for America of 13:13. Another stacked top class field, paced through 3K by sub 13 man Woody Kincaid. And as always, Scott kind of ran from the front, but he was outkicked by his Bowerman teammate Grant Fisher, who he'd pipped in the 10 a couple of weeks before. Scott still PB'd in 13:05, which basically makes you, when you watch the whole race, it just, I mean, it's like stating the obvious, but it just makes you realize how unbelievably hard running sub 13 is. When he kind of finishes obviously 5 seconds off the mark and left everything out there for it. So, and a quick quote from Mark Scott, which is basically saying that when you're unsatisfied after running 13:05, things aren't in a bad spot. So, obviously, in reflective mood there. And just a recommendation on Grant Fisher for those that haven't heard of him as well. He's got a new podcast called The Half Step Pod, and it's first two episodes. So I don't know if any of you, I know George, you've listened to them, haven't you? They're really good listening, because he basically pulls apart the two races that we've talked about on the last couple of episodes, the 10 and this 5,000 meters race. And he kind of really goes to town on the detail and, you know, kind of goes through it from start to finish. And it's just a really, really good insight. Moving on kind of more recently, so over the 11th and the 13th, we had the NCAA indoor championship. So we had the Division One in Fayetteville in Arizona. And we had the Division Two competition, which was held in Birmingham, Alabama, over the same weekend. So, and some, well, one really notable British performance, which was Finley McClear. He runs for Miami Uni, which sounds a bloody brilliant place to study, to be honest. A bit better than Loughborough. George, you want to get to Miami, I reckon?
I think it's Miami, Ohio, or somewhere like that.
Really? No way.
I think so. Let me double check. You carry on, I'll double check.
That's really my image of him just kind of training on the beach and running with Dan Marino and whatnot. But anyway, he ran 1:45.91. So
Dan Marino is a nice reference for the kids there as well for me.
Oh, sure. George, have you heard of Dan Marino?
Not a clue.
He must still be playing, mustn't he? He'd be playing for 40 years now. He's still playing. Anyway, for anyone that doesn't know, he's the old Miami Dolphins quarterback. Moving swiftly on, we'll go back to Finley anyway. So Finley ran 1:45.91 to take second in the 800 metres, and which was a under-23 British record, 7th on the all-time on the UK list and 9th on the all-time of the NCAA list. His previous best was 1:47.33. And since 2018, he's basically focused almost entirely on the 800 metres rather than kind of splitting between 800 and 1500, which has seen him kind of make these gains. And he was the European under-20 bronze medalist 2019. I presume you've all kind of seen it. It was just really good to see at the end as well when he got pipped. He actually almost didn't really care about the time in the moment, and he was just really gutted not to get the win. So he's obviously a kind of true competitor as well. So it's going to be exciting years ahead, I think, for Finley McClear. Just some other notable performances in the D1 event. And so Tom Dodd of Birchfield in Michigan went 7th in the mile in 3:58. And Yusuf Bizimana of Victoria Park in Tower Hamlets, also Texas at Austin University. He was just behind in 3:59. In the Division Two competition held in Birmingham, James Young of Morpeth and Academy of Art. He won the miles race in a PB of 4:00.40. And then hot off the press from yesterday was the NCAA cross country, which kind of the standout performance was the Patrick Deaver, who finished in 5th in a race that was won by Connor Mance of BYU, with Northern Arizona taking team title for the men. Other notable performances, Charles Hicks of Shaftesbury Barnet, Stanford University, clever runner, came in 14th, and Isaac Akers of Corby and Tulsa University came in 19th. In the women's, there were top 50 finishes for Poppy Tank of the City of Plymouth Club and the University of Utah, and also Sarah Chapman. So it's a Slough, Eaton and Hounslow running club, who also runs for Missouri University. And I know you were quite impressed by the coverage, weren't you, Ben, of the cross country?
Yeah, I was. So I sat down and watched the men's race this morning on the NCAA YouTube channel. And I was watching it and I was just thinking the level of production and the coverage and the commentary and the sort of live stats and live data that was sort of all happening at the same time was really high quality, really. And it was, I thought it was just a pretty much the standard for which other races should probably work towards. So they had kilometer splits every kilometer. So live splits of what the leaders were going through. They had sort of moving positions leaderboard on the screen the whole time for sort of overall team positions. They had little profiles of the top 6 runners for each of the teams, little photos, age, PBs, and they would regularly update like who was the team currently in first place and second place and third place. They had different camera angles. So they had cameras on a truck, a little golf cart following the leaders. They had sort of overhead coverage as well. Just a really professional coverage of a cross-country event. And I was saying to you guys, probably the best coverage of a running event I've seen, including sort of anything we see on the BBC, any sort of major marathon races, big city races that we see. Now, obviously, a lot of that, I'm sure, is down to money. We know there's lots of money in the NCAA, but just a top quality sort of coverage. And also what I said to you is if I'm a kid sitting at home watching that, then that really did make cross country and running look cool to me. So I think it goes a long way if you want this sport to grow, really. What did you think, George?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant coverage. Just like I say, compared to like any major marathon we've seen, like Boston, London, it was as good, if not better. And I mean, it probably made easy by the fact that as far as cross countries go, I think it was more or less a road race, wasn't it? I'd like to see them try and get some of those golf buggies around some of the cross country courses we run. But you can say, yeah, it was brilliant. And like the live updates, the live data on the screen, it was just really, really well done.
They even had split screen. I know we've gone on how many times have we mentioned split screen on this podcast before. So when the winner crossed the line, they had him on the screen, but they also had the other people crossing the line, and they had a timer and everything. It was just everything you needed really to enjoy the race and know what was going on, not just at the front of the field, but throughout really. Check that out on YouTube on the NCAA channel if you're interested. The men and women's race are up there. And interestingly, Kat, the men ran 10k and the women ran 6k. So not that we want to open up that box again.
Yeah, I did notice that.
First of all, we've had some news that the London Marathon funding has been announced. So London Marathon Events announced a list of athletes it has offered to fund over the next year. They offer the funding to athletes who are not part of the British Athletics funding programme and so give the chance of some support for emerging, ineligible or otherwise overlooked athletes. And one of those athletes includes this week's interviewee, Verity Ockenden. So there are 29 athletes who are sort of covered in this funding overall. And I think there are about 14 or 15 new names. And some of those new names include Rosie Clark, Verity Ockenden, Elizabeth Bird, Stephanie Davis as well. So good to see more athletes getting funding. I suppose what will take up a lot of our conversation on our next podcast, guys, is the upcoming Olympic marathon trials, which we've mentioned a few times already. That's taking place on Friday, the 26th of March, Friday morning, I believe. At the time of recording, so it is Tuesday the 16th today, there's been no start lists announced. And as we mentioned previously, there haven't been any sort of real indication about live stream information just yet. George, what you've done, you've had a bit of a look at the selection policy to try and sort of get the important information out of it. So you're going to talk us through what the trials mean, what people may need to run and what that means for a selection for the Olympics.
Yeah, so yeah, I think there was a bit, well, particularly amongst us, and I'm sure other people, a bit of confusion as to what the trials actually were, whether it was based on where you finished or, yeah, what the selection criteria were. So went through the selection policy, pretty lengthy, boring document, I suppose, but, yeah, pulled out the main bit. So three men, three women, and they have to run, so they have to do two things to be eligible for selection based on what the policy says. So firstly, they have to run the standard, which is 2:11:30 for men and 2:29:30 for women. And they have to have run that between the 1st of January 2019 and 5th of April 2020, or the 1st of September 2020 and 29th of March 2021. I'm not really sure why there's a gap between April and September. I guess it was just because there were no races going on. So they have to have run standard, and then they have to have demonstrated form and fitness between the 1st of February 2021 and the 29th of March 2021, which basically means they've got to run the trial. That applies to everyone except Callum Hawkins, who has been pre-selected. He was pre-selected for the 2020 Olympics in December 2019. That was after he finished fourth at the Doha World Championships. Pre-selection requires medal potential, which Hawkins has shown. He's finished fourth at the World Championship marathon in 2017 and 2019. So Callum Hawkins doesn't have to run the trial. He is on the plane, which means there's two men left to be picked. And there are two men that have the standards at the moment. So that's Ben Connor. He's run 2:11:20, and Johnny Mell has run 2:10:03. It looks like that if no other athletes run 2:11:30 or better at Kew Gardens next Friday, it will be Hawkins, Meller and Connor in the three-man British team. Other names in that men's race to watch out for, although, as we said, we don't actually have the start list, but based on previous performances in the marathon, Dowie Griffiths has a PB of 2:09, but outside of the standard dates, Matt Clowes has run 2:13, Derek Hawkins 2:12, Charlie Holson 2:13, Josh Griffiths 2:13, Andrew Davis 2:14, Scott Overall's ran 2:10, but too long ago. Chris Thompson's ran 2:11, but again, too long ago. And there will be debutants, I'm sure, in that men's race. Mo Farah also has the standard, but has said he's running the 10,000 metres. So, and then on the women's side, there are four women currently with the standard. All of them ran it in 2019. And that's Jess Piasecki, 2:25, Charlotte Perdue, 2:25, Steph Twell, 2:26, and Stephanie Davis, 2:27. Other names to watch out for there is Natasha Cockrum, 2:30, Tish Jones has run 2:31, Sarah Inglis, 2:29:41, Niamh Mitchell, 2:33, Tracy Barlow's run 2:30. And again, there may well be more debutants in that women's race. Selection is then made on the 30th of March. So they will pick two men to join Callum Hawkins and three women from all of the eligible athletes with the standard. And then if more than two men or more than three women are eligible, other criteria includes position and performance of the trials and previous major competition history. So it's not necessarily quite as simple as who finished top two at the trials. It might go a different way. We'll post start lists, live stream info on our Instagram as soon as we know it, and then probably do a preview post. And also it's worth checking out for 2022 Commonwealth Games standards, because I'm pretty sure they opened on the 1st of January 2021. So for England, for men, that's 2:14, Northern Ireland 2:13, Scotland 2:15:12, pretty precise, and Wales 2:15:30. And then for the women, it's for England 2:34. Northern Ireland 2:32, Scotland 2:35:24, and Wales 2:35:30. So I'm sure there'll also be athletes going for those times for the Commonwealth Games next year.
Thanks, George. That's great. We were joking, you're probably one of the few people who's actually sat through and read those 12 pages of selection document. Robbie, can you see any other men sort of break into those top three positions or top two positions other than the obvious?
Not really. I mean, unless Dowie Griffiths pulls something out of the bag, possibly. I know Matt Clowes was that 2:13:57. That wasn't London, was it? Because I know he was going for 2:10 at London, wasn't he? And was massively disappointed. So maybe he's a bit of a dark horse, because I know that he was on pace for 2:10-ish for quite a long way and then fell off in the last 6 or 7 miles. So if he's made tweaks and has worked out what he, what improvements he can make, then maybe he's a bit of a dark horse. I think I'm going to go for a Ben Connor win, I think, actually, to be honest. I think he's going to pip Johnny Mellor.
George, and obviously we're going to be watching keenly Frank Baddick's race and hoping he does well and wish him all the best. You've had a fairly close eye at some of his build-up, so he's obviously in good shape.
Yeah, been training well, and on Strava as well, looks like things have been going very well. So, yeah, hopefully his marathon debut goes to plan. And just as Robbie was saying on Matt Clowes as well, I follow his Strava, and he's been, looks like he's been running very well. So I think he could be a dark horse.
It'd be interesting to see if some of the women that ran in London in those really bad conditions run a little bit better. So Natasha Cockrum obviously ran 2:30 at London, but that was bad enough for some of the favourites to drop out. So it'd be really interesting to see if she has a good run at this trial.
Do you have a winner prediction for the women's cap?
Probably Charlotte Perdue, I guess. She's quite strong, quite a little fighter. So I imagine she'll do well. But yeah, I'd be really interested to see Naomi Mitchell and Natasha Cockrum after they did kind of tough it out at London. See, hopefully they get better conditions and see what they can do.
Yeah, I've just had obviously 10-day forecast isn't the most accurate, but at the moment for London, it is saying like 15 degrees and pretty still wind-wise. So it looks, at the moment, pretty good conditions, which is good.
That is perfect, 15 degrees.
Well, I'm sure we'll all be watching if we can, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot in our next episode. Exciting to have that on the race calendar. Okay, finishing up here, guys. Announced today that the British 10,000 metre trials will be heading to Birmingham in June. So after the cancellation of the night of the 10,000 PBs, which is held at Highgate in North London, the British Olympic trials and European 10,000 metre cup will now be held at the University of Birmingham track on the same day of June the 5th. So the University of Birmingham are confident that they can hold a COVID safe, secure event. Key contenders for the men include Brits such as Mark Scott, Sam Atkin, whilst amongst the women, Steph Twell has missed out on the marathon trials to focus on the 10,000 metres. So it'll be interesting to see how well she goes. And also, assuming we may see Mo Farah there as well, as he has not raced a 10,000 metres since winning the world title in 2017, as you said earlier, Robbie. Other news fresh off the press today is that England Athletics has released an updated return of racing announcement. So again, hopefully looking into the not too distant future, we can see some 3,000 metres to 10,000 metre events take place with multiple people all at once. Again, looking towards the end of March into June for that new roadmap. So jump onto the England Athletics website to have a closer look at that update. And also, finally, we've seen an article today in the Times, I believe, that suggests that 9 athletes from the Great Britain team who were at the European indoors in Poland have subsequently tested positive for COVID-19 since return and since being isolating. So we know that one of those athletes is Holly Bradshaw. I'm not really sure who the other 8 athletes are. Kat, did you want to introduce the sort of 2-part interview we have with Verity Oppida this week?
Yeah, so I first spoke to Verity in January, just before she did her first race of the season. And she then went on to win other races and eventually get the bronze at the European Championship. So it's been really good to talk to her sort of before all of that happened. So she's been improving every year, and it seems this year is really where she's finally got her kind of breakthrough. And so it was really good to speak to her before she did her first race. And then again, I spoke to her on Friday, so just a week after the European Championships, and caught up again. So yeah, it was really good. Hope everyone enjoys listening to it.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. What was, Kat, just give us a bit of a sneak preview. What was her sort of overriding emotion of the bronze when it perhaps looked like it could have been a silver or a gold at one point?
Yeah, I think kind of the same as our reaction to it, just a bit, you know, she was so close. She knows she was so close. But yeah, we did discuss in the interview, she, you know, hopefully it'll keep her hungry for the next thing rather than feeling like she's kind of done and, you know, achieved what she wanted to. So yeah, she's still very positive going forwards to the Olympics and things like that. So yeah, it's been really good to talk to her.
That's great. Well, listen, guys, we hope you enjoy the interview. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. Always sort of let us know what you think of the podcast on Instagram, Twitter and everything else. We really appreciate you taking some time out and listening in. I ask this every week, guys, anything interesting coming up? fun happening in training or work or anything else, Kat?
Well, restrictions have finally allowed me to go back to my regular coffee with Coach John at the Woods, so that's been good. That'll be planned very tomorrow.
Good. Sounds good. Coach John and coffee is good. Anything from you, Robbie or George?
No, nothing particular for me, just more the same, really. Online lectures and training is about it.
Robert?
I think I'll be looking at where Miami Uni is, to be honest, for the next hour or so, and then trying to work out how I can go over and train over there. So I've got something interesting to say next week.
It's in Oxford, Ohio, Robbie.
Ah, okay. That's miles away from Miami, Florida.
Yeah. You could look at some maybe up-to-date references for the next show instead of Dan Marino, maybe.
I'm going to make it my... I'm going to make it my quest to try and get in as many 1980s and 1990s NFL quarterbacks as I can.
Well, on that bombshell, thanks for listening, guys. Take care. And we'll talk soon. Cheers, guys.
See ya.
See ya.
Tonight on Track, we are really excited to be joined by GB international athlete Verity Ockenden, best known for representing Team GB in Tilburg at the European Cross Country Championships in 2018. Since then, she has improved year on year and has impressive PBs from 800 metres up to half marathon. She's a name we've mentioned often on Track after great performances at the British Championships, the Bromley Twilight Meeting and the Podium 5K event in Barrowford. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. So you're racing 3,000 metres indoors this weekend at the Brigham Invitational in Manchester. How are preparations going for that?
Thank you for having me, first of all. It's a very strange kind of race to be preparing for. I entered it really last minute. It's organised by Vicente Modal, who's Amy Pratt's coach, and they've done an amazing job of putting it all together, but there's been all sorts of things which I'm sure everybody's aware of, like just finding COVID tests to do like at a couple of days notice and things like that, and just feeling like some extra pressure regarding travel arrangements and hotels. Normally you just book a hotel and like, and now you just think twice before you do all of that. So yeah, and even just stuff like food. I always take my own food to a race anyway, but like I definitely wouldn't even stop anywhere on the way to pick anything up now. So it's just a lot more kind of those small things to consider before a race. But I'm trying just to make it as normal as possible anyway. So yeah, we'll see.
Are you excited to be racing with so few races in 2020?
Yeah, so the last time I raced, it was the Outdoor Champs. Like, I haven't done anything since then. And in a way, I'm kind of glad about that. Just because life in general has been so, like, uncertain for everybody that I think it's been quite difficult to be consistent with training. I have like had to isolate once myself, so that was like a period that obviously training wasn't ideal because I was just on my turbo. So yeah, in a way, like, I'm not too fussed that it's taken a while to get a race on the calendar because I haven't been ready anyway. But yeah, I've definitely missed it. I think it's quite important to keep doing races just for like your confidence and your like just that ability mentally to attack a race. It takes practice. Hopefully I'll be able to kind of slot back in where I left off, but we'll see.
Well, massive good luck with that. Do you know if there'll be any coverage?
Think it's going to be streamed. I saw a link to it earlier and I didn't save it. I think it's something to do with like the New Balance Manchester group. Somebody is going to be there with an iPhone And that's all I've had.
Great. We'll look out for that and be cheering you on. On track, we like to go through your PBs to give the listeners an idea of just how fast you are. I've taken them all from Power of 10, so let me know if I've got any wrong. So we've got 800 metres, 206.18 at Bromley in 2017.
Yeah.
And we've got 1500 metres, 4:12.26 in 19. And then we've got an indoor mile of 4:45.93 in America. 3,000 metres that you set last year at 8:56.76.
Yeah, that's my favourite.
And we've got 5,000 metres indoors in 2019 of 15:34.33. 10,000 metres... 32:34.47 at the night of the 10,000 metre PB.
I can't even remember some of these myself. Good reminder.
Yeah, nice to hear them again.
Yeah.
We've got a mile at 4:35 in 2019.
Yeah.
And then we've got the 5K that you did in Barrowford, 15:37 in 2020.
No, yeah.
The 10K 32:39 in 2019. Less results when we get up to the high stuff. We've got a 10 mile 55:15 in 2019. And I can just see one half marathon back in 2016 of 76:19.
Oh, that was a long time ago. Yeah. I'm still quite proud of that one though. Right.
Yeah, so that was my next question. Which of those PBs would you say you're the most proud of?
I'm definitely like the proudest of the outdoor 3K. I just think that's the closest I've got to a qualifying standard so far. And I'm still like, I've still got a few seconds to go with that one, but yeah, it's just like, it's exciting because it's like within distance, whereas the other ones I've still got quite a lot of work to do. Nothing like impossible, like with my 5k and my 10k, I know that given the right circumstances I could take a massive chunk off.
So the 3000 meters is the one you're focusing on for now.
Come the summer, like obviously there's no 3k on the outdoor track at the Olympics or at the Commonwealth or anything, so like then I will move my focus up to the 5 and the 10k.
Do you see any more half marathons or even marathons in the near future?
My coach is always just mentioning it, you know, saying like, ah, oh, don't knock it till you've tried it. And you know, it's like they're such fun events and actually way more lucrative if you're trying to make a living from running, which isn't really happening for me at the moment at all. but yeah, I really love the track. So moving to road, I'm not ready for it yet. I mean, that half marathon I did like years ago, I did it because it was a new marathon at the time. It was like their first or second year, so they had a lot of prize money to like incentivize entries, and yeah, I got like £500 or something for coming fifth. And I didn't really train specifically for it, so just to finish it, like quite a good time was like really satisfying for me, but it was so painful. And the aftermath of it, you know, recovering from a half marathon was a lot harder than a track race, so I didn't do it again in a hurry.
Are there any other performances that aren't necessarily PBs that you are really proud of?
Yeah, in fact, I think a lot of the time I don't go go for the time so much. I'm a bit more of like a championship style racer, and I like to run tactically. It's fun. Some people don't like it, but I just think it's all part of the game. So now I play to my strengths, which often means qualifying for things or getting medals, which is very exciting. But, you know, it's always a little bit bittersweet because you think, oh, I could have run faster if I'd raced it differently. I think there's so many factors to take into consideration with racing. It's what makes it an exciting sport to watch. I mean, it's exciting when everybody goes eyeballs out in more of a time trial as well, but yeah, I just like the kind of adrenaline of waiting for people to make moves and trying to guess what people are going to do.
So with all the races you've done a fair amount of cross country and track. You've already said now you're not interested in road at the moment. So which do you prefer out of cross country and track?
It's always track. It's funny because I grew up like in such a rural location. Like, I've quite an agricultural background, and like cross country was always like my bread and butter as a kid, and I was actually better at that when I was at school. But now I think, I don't know whether it's just my physical kind of strengths and weaknesses, I can tough out the cross country. I can be quite gritty when I want to be, but I just don't enjoy it quite so much as the track. Bit of a sun worshipper and just like to go fast.
So you're back to racing on the track this weekend, but have you got any other goal races coming up?
So the weekend after this one is the European like trials for the indoor European championships, which will be in Poland at the beginning of March. And it's been so crazy preparing for that, because as you probably know, they cancelled the British championships. So I just thought, oh, that's it, like indoor season is completely off, there's no point. And then within a couple of days, they just kind of reinstated it, but not as a championship, just as a selection trial and with a reduced field. Unfortunately, like, they had invited me to be a part of that field. So this weekend will be a little bit of a rust buster, I guess. And then it's like showtime up in Manchester again the following weekend.
So talk us through, what does a normal training week look like for you at the moment?
At the moment I'm averaging about 75 to 80 miles a week. I'd say Monday I have an easy run, do some S&C from my physio Kyle, then Tuesdays do a double in the morning, which is anywhere between 3 and 5 miles depending how lazy I'm feeling. Then I have a track session that evening with some intervals, which can be anything from like 10 by 1k or like mile repeats, sometimes some 400s to spice things up a little bit. Wednesdays are a midweek long run, so that is usually like 12 to 14 miles, again with some S&C, so I try and do that 3 times a week. It's not too intense, but just little regular like 20 minute core workouts and on particular weaknesses. And I try and do at least like 15 minutes of yoga the day. Doesn't always happen. Then Thursdays will be an easy run again, probably 8 to 10 miles. Fridays are quite a big day, So I'll do a tempo run in the morning, which is anywhere between 6 to 10 miles of just like hard running. And I usually like, usually we try and do the last mile like super fast as well. Or like alternate, you know, like throw in a fast one in the middle. So yeah, that's Friday. And most of the winter I was just doing easy runs in the afternoon after that. But now that I'm kind of getting back into the swing of like hard training again, we've been doing some sprints in the afternoon as well. So that really is a day that I need to like schedule a nap in as well.
I was going to say, what do you do in between that to recover?
Yeah, just
messed up.
Nothing really. I'm a bit of a zombie in between that one. So then obviously Saturday is like an easy day after that. And then Sunday will be one of my favorites, was just long run, classic, like 16 milers. When I wasn't training like amazingly a few months back, like I hadn't really lost my fitness because I just felt like going on really long Sunday runs. I would do like 19 mile runs fine. And I really enjoyed that. And it made me feel like proud of myself, even though like my sessions weren't anything spectacular. So
do you do any sort of cross training in between running?
No, I don't actually. I spent a lot of time aqua jogging and biking a couple of seasons ago when I had a tibial stress fracture. Yeah, and that really was more than enough for me. Like, I haven't wanted to get back anywhere near those kind of things since then. But I did actually, I had some funding from London Marathon last year. And I did spend that on a turbo, which was quite useful for when I got nobbled to isolate for COVID, because yeah, I couldn't go out. So I just biked.
Have you had to change the way you train for because of COVID? Like, have you still got access to a track or anything at the moment?
I was for a long time just doing everything on the road by myself and trying to kind of think, you know what, if it's hilly or windy, do you know, it just makes it harder and it just makes me tougher. Yeah, you just have to learn to be resourceful and be resilient by yourself. Recently, we're not really supposed to brag about this. England Athletics have created a list of athletes who are eligible to go on track. And again, I was very lucky to get on that. So it's not the same. Like, I know that I'm very lucky to have access to the track when so many people don't now. But at the same time, I'm like really enjoying it because
yeah,
don't have any of my teammates there. I just actually miss like having to yell track at the kids that are like messing around in lane one. Like, never thought I'd see the day when I was saying that.
So from 2014 to 2016, you trained in a very different environment, training out in the United States. How does that compare to the UK?
It's a completely different world. And I did struggle quite a lot to adjust to like my own setup when I came back. I just hadn't really thought about how different it would be. And I suppose I took for granted just having all of my races organized for me, all of my travel and hotels were booked. You can become, yeah, so much more focused and kind of automatic, especially with your teammates around. Like, I think you kind of feed off each other's energy at races, and going to races as a team is a lot less intimidating than walking in to a venue by yourself and not knowing anybody. And that was like one of the things I really noticed when I came back was that I just didn't really know anybody on the British circuit anymore.
Yeah.
I had no friends when I went to races to start with, and I just like that wasn't fun. Obviously now, like, I've kind of, yeah, I've made friends with people, got to know people just by getting on with it and doing races, sharing rooms at competitions and stuff. Yeah, that was quite a big thing for me.
Is a lot of the training done together as a team as well?
We would always have like set practice times, and it was a great feeling to just be part of this like train going around the track and have this camaraderie. And even people who were injured would often just come and support for the session, which is really good. So I did enjoy that. It's just such a nice feeling running as a pack and all having the same goal, or even if you've got slightly different goals, you just the same team, which is great. And just have this sense of identity, I suppose. Just when you get a scholarship to run, like, it is like having a job. That's how I regarded it, and it was full time. Like, I kind of feel embarrassed to admit that, but I didn't really make that many friends outside of my team when I was there, because I was just like, that's all I was interested in. And I lived with my teammates. We did absolutely everything together. It is 100% about lifestyle, I think, with running. And a lot of people, I think, underestimate like what a difference it can make to live with people who just have the same routine as you. So if you're all getting up at 6 a.m. for practice, everything just flows, like you're all going to bed at the same time. Nobody's like keeping you awake, playing their music at night or whatever.
Yeah, big difference to running and training on your own back here in the UK.
Well, there's like much more of a grassroots community with clubs. Like as you get older in Britain, and more of like a tradition with that, because in the States, once you've finished university, there's this kind of gap where like you either become a professional and you run for a team, like, I don't know,
Bowman Track Club.
Or with the Boss Girls with Emma Coburn. Or like there's not really that much in between. I think it's growing.
Yeah.
But I think back in the UK, we have much more of a tradition of like running being, I suppose, like a working man's thing.
So now you're back training in the UK. You mentioned you train at the track for Salisbury City, but which UK club do you currently represent?
My first claim club is actually Swansea Harriers. So I did my undergrad there. And yeah, I felt sort of owed it to them because like I wasn't that good as an undergrad. And they'd still like invite me down to all of their sessions, even though I wasn't a member. And just, I think they just sort of took pity on me. I was this like, I had a bit of talent, but they could see that I wasn't really like knowing what to do with it. So they just invited me to join all of their sessions and said, you know, well, you're a student, you don't need to worry about membership for now because we know you can't afford it. So yeah, once I sort of grew up a bit, I thought I kind of owe it to them to represent them and give something back.
So the big news on the UK club running scene at the moment is the cross-country debate for equal distances. How do you feel about that, having competed in cross-country over the years?
True, I'm all for equal rights generally. But I do think it's actually quite a dangerous decision to make. I think we're a sport who already has a lot of issues with injury in young female athletes, disordered eating, and body image problems. And I just think, like, so many girls drop out of running at that age already. Do you really want to make it harder for them?
Yeah.
By making it longer? I mean, like, there's plenty of time left when you get older to do a longer distance if you want to. And yeah, I think that should be a choice rather than something that's forced upon you when you're a teenager. I struggled enough when it was a 10K at the Intercounties at Loughborough. I think I put, like, on top of my usual, like, 80-mile weeks, winters I was doing at the time, I knew I'd have to up my game to be competitive over the increased distance. And I put 3 90-plus-mile weeks in preparation for that, alongside a full-time job. To be honest, it completely broke me. I did suffer from fatigue after that race, and it demoralised me as well, because I didn't even run well after all that work. And maybe that was a fluke, like, I just had a bad race. But I just think, if I can't do that, like, as a grown woman, to expect a young, developing athlete to put in that kind of training and feel pressured, yeah, to do that kind of thing is, like, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to hear your personal experiences about racing the longer distance, and that's some really important points raised. I hope they take some of this into consideration when they make a decision. Right, I've got some quick, oh no, one more thing. Whilst I was busy stalking you online in preparation for this, I came across your Spotify playlist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was looking more for any other podcasts you'd done, but I found your Spotify account, and I found your race playlist.
Oh.
Do you remember putting that one together?
Yeah, I've got quite a few, actually, so I'm wondering which one it was, yeah, whether it was one of the more, like, rude ones, or...
It's got some 50 Cent on there, and some, yeah, just, like, general... It's pretty good. I used it for my on Tuesday.
Oh, I hope it helps.
Yeah, it's good. It's got some good tunes on there to get you going. I thought, not so much for my long run, but it was...
Yeah. Yeah, I do have to be careful when I listen to it sometimes. Sometimes, like, I think, oh, I'll just listen to that one for fun, and then I get all psyched up and for no reason, and yeah, it ends badly.
Around on your easy run.
Yeah, exactly. Can't be doing that.
So do you have a go-to tune that you put on before a race? Anything that you sort of use to get you ready?
Do you know what? I was actually thinking that I needed to kind of do a new one for this race, which I haven't done yet. So I'll think about it, and maybe I'll get back to you on it. Like, it's all very well having your favourite songs, but sometimes, if, like me, you play them too much when you shouldn't, like, they do begin to lose their effect because you get too used to them and it doesn't work anymore. So I need some fresh inspiration there, really. I'm looking for, like, some more aggressive and energized female voices, I think, at the moment. Probably Sia is one of the best artists for that. Yeah, she's got
I ran London Marathon with Sia's Cheap Thrills on repeat. I'm not sure I would do it now, but for my previous marathons, I have run with one song on repeat, whichever song time is working, put it on, and that was one of them.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, I think that's a very good choice if you're going to listen to just one.
Yeah. I'll move on to the quickfire questions now. One of them was which song you would choose, but we'll see what you choose on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Yeah. So if you could go for a run with one athlete, dead or alive, who would it be?
That's quite tricky. I feel like I'm probably not taking into account a lot of athletes here, particularly as I'm just not that well versed in like athletic history. But my athlete of the moment is Alexi Pappas. Like, I don't know if you've seen any of her films or documentaries. She's just published a autobiography, which is such an incredible read. I haven't even finished it yet, but I would recommend it to anybody. She's just so honest, so energetic, and her perspective on life and running is just very unusual. So I think she's a very inspirational person.
So if you could only choose one race a year to compete in, so not a distance, but an actual race, which one would it be?
I've got two here that I really like. Can I have two?
Yeah, I'll let you have two.
Okay. It's mainly because it's January at the moment, and in previous years, I would have gone to the Cross Internationale d'Italica in Seville. Oh, it's just like the atmosphere there is like nothing else. Well, it's not like nothing else. It's like Night of the 10K PBs, which is my second one. just both of them are so loud that like you just forget that running even hurts, because you're just listening and like getting spurred on. There's so much adrenaline that you can just absorb from the crowd, and it just makes running a completely different experience, and you just get like bowled along by everybody else.
So that's it for the quick fire questions. Where can people find you on social media if they want to follow you?
I am on Instagram as Young Berrett, which is my school nickname, being the youngest in the class. I have to admit, I haven't posted much recently because I've been trying to just have a little break and focus on myself. but I am there.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us this evening and answer all our questions. Again, massive good luck for your up and coming races.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And I'll enjoy listening to your podcast as well now I know about them. It's been really nice chatting.
Yeah, thanks very much. Welcome to part two of the interview. And thanks again, Verity, for taking the time out to talk to us. We recorded part one 2 days before your first race of 2021. You've since gone on to smash a 3,000 metre PB and win a bronze medal at the European Championships. Take us back to that first race of the season, the Brigham Invitational. How was it to race so well at your first race back?
The first race was honestly a huge surprise. Yeah, I really didn't know what to expect going into that. And you know, halfway through the race I was kind of talking myself out of it, thinking, oh, I don't really feel great, but I'm driven all the way up here, kind of got to finish this thing. And then I don't know, just sort of out of nowhere I started feeling good again towards the end, and then yeah, all of a sudden it was the last lap, looked at the clock and thought, oh, I'm actually going to run a massive PB, so I better run even faster. And yeah, it was just great. I felt so confident and so hopeful after that. So.
Great. After not racing for so long, it's hard to know where you are at, but that was impressive.
Yeah, I think I kind of impressed myself, because I think I felt like my training, I'd been doing the training as best as I could, but I just felt like it wasn't as perfect as it could have been. Obviously, none of us have been able to train as perfectly as we want to. And that kind of applies at whatever level you're at in the sport. Like, we all wish we could have been able to do things better over the past year. It's nice when actually you realise that it doesn't make too much of a difference.
At what point did you think you stood a chance of getting selected? Was it after you'd run that race and run that massive PB, did you suddenly realise that you were right up there and likely to be selected?
Yeah, that was a real game changer, actually. I thought, yeah, I can do this. And looking at the number of other people who wanted to be selected, or unfortunately who were able to be selected. I know there's some people that actually weren't on the list who probably would have liked to run that selection trials. Unfortunately they couldn't, and I guess it worked to my advantage, which I think is a shame, because I think the more people I could race, the better. That's just the way it is, unfortunately. I knew, you know, if there's only six people in the race, then yeah, I stand quite a good chance of getting selected out of those six.
And that race went well as well, another win.
Yeah, it was like deja vu, really. being in the same venue, making the same journey up.
Playing the same pre-race song.
Yeah, exactly. And I took your advice there, actually. I played one song the whole time. And I've got to say it works. So,
yeah, have you now worn that song out? Have you got to move on now?
Well, I played just that song in Turin as well, actually. So now, like, it's been round a lot.
Yeah.
but we'll see. If it works, it works.
What was the experience like travelling out to Poland and competing? How are you with the nerves and things?
It was quite a complicated procedure, as you can imagine, like the amount of times we got tested and the amount of paperwork we had to fill in. That was a lot to get our heads around. We thought we had loads of time kind of to get organized before the champs, and then suddenly, like, it was time to get on the plane and rushing packing the night before. It came around really quickly. I wouldn't say I was too nervous about the experience as a whole, because I have done it before now. I've been away with the GB team, and I know, like, they're not scary, they're really nice people, and it's their job to look after you. That was okay. But I think when we actually got to the arena itself, yeah, and I saw all the other athletes and we were doing our final preparations, that's when, yeah, I started to get a little bit jittery. But with the 3,000 as well, you know, I would actually prefer a longer race, especially at a championship level when it's so tactical. Like, in my heat, there was so much pushing and shoving. I got spiked and people were getting, like, pushed onto the infields. And in my final, somebody, like, fell over, all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, I think, and that does tend to happen more in the shorter races, like it happened for my roommate Holly in the 1500 as well. So yeah, it was too much drama.
You seem to have quite a sort of set way of racing the 3000, where you kind of start steady at the back. Is that a sort of a set tactic?
I'd never like to say it's a set tactic, because I like to think, like, I'll surprise some people with being a little bit unpredictable occasionally. You never know. But I do think it's a sensible way to run. In distance racing, it's just smart to like conserve your energy to hold the tightest line and stay out of trouble and just use people. Like a lot of kind of old-fashioned people will say like, oh, you're just being lazy, but if that's how you win then and it works, you know, it's all part of the game really.
It's fun to watch you racing like that.
It takes a little bit of nerve sometimes depending on how late you want to leave it, and I do think, well, I did leave it too late this time, but I'm still happy with bronze. So
how do you feel about that race being so close?
Yeah, I've watched it back so many times, and yeah, that final lap is just ingrained in my head. I think about it on every single run and I start running faster on my runs like just thinking about it, but you know, there's nothing I can do now apart from learn from it. Yeah. And keep the fire in my belly for next time, make it right.
It may make you hungrier for the next thing. Had you got the gold, you might be thinking, I'm done.
That's exactly what I said to my coach today, actually, Tony, and said, like, you know, it's probably a good thing that you didn't get everything you wanted from this championships, even though you didn't go in expecting to win, or, you know, we wanted to medal, but and gold was obviously always like something to it. It's always something to aim for. Yeah. We didn't think I'd come that close to it.
So this week you got some good news about funding from the London Marathon. How do you think that's going to help you going forward?
That was honestly such a relief. Yeah, I've been really living on a complete shoestring and relying on the kindness of friends and family to do things like buy me the best bikes and put me up and pay for like travel and accommodation up to all those races leading up to the Europeans. So yeah, to actually have that funding is just gonna take a lot of stress off from me, which obviously helps me train better and race better. So that's going to go towards an altitude trip in Flagstaff come April and May, which I've never been to Arizona before for altitude, so I think that's going to make like a massive difference. Just really excited to work hard and be surrounded with other people doing the same thing as well. I've still got quite a lot. Like, I know it sounds amazing to be on the London Marathon funding, and it is, but yeah, I've still got quite a lot of organisation and fundraising to go if I want to be out there for about 2 months. So that's basically what I've been doing all week this week, is just making phone calls and planning how I'm gonna make the Olympics, basically, because it's not long now.
So that's your next goal, is to go up the distance and
I've read it. Yeah, I think running like an 8:46 has just proved to myself now that, you know, to get the qualifying time for the 5K, I just need to maintain that pace for an extra 5 laps outdoors, and I've got it. And I think I'm in shape to do that. I've just got to put everything in place to carry on doing what I'm doing, and the little bit extra fitness I'll get from being at altitude, and hopefully, yeah, it will come good.
So how do you think your training will change? Do you think you'll carry on doing pretty much the same mileage?
Yeah, I mean, it's working, so I'm not going to change anything at all. Not that that's up to me, it's up to Tony. He's mastermind behind this whole thing. And obviously, like, it will change a little bit in terms of intensity when I'm up at 7,000 feet because, yeah, you just physically can't do the same kind of stuff you do at sea level. But I don't think, like, the structure of the workouts will actually change that much.
Thank you very much for giving us an update. This has been great to hear all about your year so far. And hopefully we might get you on for an interview after the Olympics.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? I'd love that. And it's been great, actually, to come back and chat to you again about all this with such, like, a positive outcome. So, yeah, you've just got to keep grinding and keep believing. Yeah, even if you feel like you're just running by yourself in the dark more than everybody else is.
Well, massive good luck going forwards into this year. We look forward to seeing all your performances and we'll definitely be talking about them on the show.
Yeah.
So thanks again for talking to us.
Thank you. You're welcome. It's been lovely. Thank you.